Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Illustration Department Podcast. My name is Giuseppe Castellano. In this podcast, I talk to folks in illustration, graphic design, publishing, animation, and other creative fields about their beginnings, their successes, and the bumps and bruises they've experienced along the way. In this episode, my guests are the attendees of our first annual Illustrators Day. It is no secret that the life of an illustrator is challenging, but if you choose that life, this September 24th recording should hopefully show you that you are in very good company. Among the topics, the attendees and I discuss why they chose illustration as a profession. With help from author and illustration collector Roger Reed, we talk about the delicate relationship between an illustrator and author, and why an author should never say, quote, my illustrator. The sound is a little off, but what the attendees share is excellent. I hope you enjoy our conversation. This is our first campfire conversation. This is me and 30 illustrators, and we're talking about illustration. This is our first Illustration Department's Illustrators Day. It's a tongue twister. So we called it IDID. This is our first time. Had a day in which we've learned about the history of illustration. We heard about how, from art directors, we've heard about, you know, what they're looking for, what they're not looking for, and all of that. We've seen a lot of really great art. Why would you choose to be an illustrator? What compelled any of you to say, you know what, I'm going to try commercial art as a career? Was it simply there's nothing else I can do? I mean, I guess I could maybe work in construction, but I really don't want to do that. I mean, what is it about the idea of being an illustrator that feels right to you guys?
I thoroughly enjoy creating an image that tells a story. And that's what it is all about for me. Mm-hmm.
I had the same experience. I was working in fine art for a number of years. And then I realized, even when I looked at a fine art piece, I always looked for the story in it. And I realized what I really like is the narrative aspect of art. So I thought, well, that goes well with illustrating. Mm-hmm. So I moved over to more interest in writing stories and illustrating them.
Right.
So for me, it was the thing that I couldn't stop doing. So I had a bunch of interests, but art would always interrupt them, and nothing would ever interrupt art. So that's when I was like, okay, I guess if this is overruling everything else I like, then it's important enough that it's something I want to pursue.
That's a good one. Art would always, like, nothing would ever interrupt art.
No, never.
It's
like I could get distracted watching, like I wanted to do zoology. So I would watch a lot of Animal Planet, but eventually be like, I want to draw these guys. But I would never be drawing and be like, I want to go watch animal documentaries, or like there was just nothing that could take me out of the art zone when I was in it.
Gotcha. Adam?
I heard something Jim Carrey said once in an interview, and it's about his dad, who was an amazing jazz pianist saxophone player, I think it was, and he quit his job to support the family, to become an accountant, and he hated it and practically killed him. He was basically like a failed accountant. So the story in that is, you can fail doing what you hate, so you might as well do what you love.
Wow.
Yeah, good one. Alicia?
So I have a kind of a different take on it. I have an older brother who's a little over than a year older than me, but he had a speech delay from his learning disabilities, and he was encouraged to draw because he couldn't find the words and figure out what to say. And you know, being that much younger than him, we were learning just the same time. And right then and there, I was like, wait, what? I can draw what's in my head? That is so cool. And we just started drawing. I didn't even have a booster seat at the time. I was probably 2. And I had to kneel on the chair in order to be high enough to draw at the table, and But that was my intro to illustration, and I've never stopped drawing since.
Nice. Matthew?
I sort of, I came to interest in art via comics, so like narrative art was always sort of foremost in my mind. And then, I mean, yeah, I guess when I got to sort of the age, illustration just seemed like a more practical application for that. And just a way to sort of make my mom happy, I guess, that I was pursuing something that wasn't as esoteric as comics, and especially because my interests in comics were more underground and independent. At least this was, yeah, just it was a way of refining that narrative style of or drawing that I really liked.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. Katie?
I really want to be an illustrator because I've always liked reading books, and I would like notice, oh, this book is illustrated by the same person as this other book that I really like. And I kind of started to realize that was like a thing you could do. And I was like, that's so cool. I want to do that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Lauren?
I've always loved drawing as a kid. I would do that all the time. And at one point it was the question of if I had to do something every day for the rest of my life, what would it be? And also, you know, later in life, as I came to realize there's a lot of other things that I love. Like at one point I did consider being like a zoologist, and I really love nature, and I love that illustration provides a path into learning about other things. Like, oh, I really would love to do an illustration talking about all the different types of flowers in this area, and it gives me an excuse to do something that I love, which is to research all the different flowers in an area. So I love that it becomes a path to learning for everyone involved.
That's great. Sarah?
At one point, I just feel like it became really evident that drawing for me is such a way to actually slow down and really understand the way that I personally perceive the world and can possibly share that with everyone, like my own individual vision. And I feel that about everyone's art. Like, I really just love looking at any art and any drawing because it's such a unique way that everyone represents how they perceive the world. And I think it's a really special thing that we can do.
Yeah. Prescott.
Illustration has come to my rescue more times than I can count. I started learning illustration at the age of 7 when I was watching my mother paint her lessons from the famous artist correspondence school. I went poured through those books. I took those books to art school with me. I had to work just to get into art school alone. I didn't get any help at all for that. I just knew I had to be an artist. I knew I had to go. And it's been a lifelong vocation for me. Mm-hmm. I had to be an illustrator.
When did you first start being an illustrator, Prescott? What year was it? Professional illustrator.
Professional, I would say it was back in 86.
Mm-hmm.
I was working for an ad agency, and they needed some illustration business. I raised my hand and said, I can do it. And I did a series of posters for them. That was my first entry into that vocation.
Yeah, amazing. Roger.
So I'm not an illustrator, but I'm fascinated with hearing from other illustrators. And I guess I raised my hand because I'm just opening a show I curated at the Society of Illustrators in New York called Artist versus Author. And it's about this situation where there are different interpretations going on of what a narrative is. It's really fascinating to see how sometimes, you know, the artist seems to have a complete mind meld with the author and is just perfectly interpreting what they had in mind. Other times there seems to be a real disconnect and the artist is sort of warping or shifting the narrative from what I think the author had in mind. Anyway, there's a whole spectrum of different responses there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been just really, really interesting. to, you know, to have gone through that process and selecting the pieces and the authors. Anyway, I had no idea there was such a variation in the way the artist responds to the author.
Yeah, and what's interesting about that is this ongoing conversation about what is an illustrator's role, particularly in the narrative space. So if it's comics or picture books or whatever, like how does the illustrator interpret the author's text? And you can't talk about that without talking about how is the illustrator treated by the author. And yeah, you can have a mind meld and you can have a great partnership. And we've seen this time and time again with just these wonderful, you know, when you can think of like Margaret Wise Brown, you immediately think of Clement Hurd. And I don't know if behind closed doors they were fighting each other, but I don't see any evidence that they were. So there were always these great combos. Margaret and H.A. Rey, of course, they were partners. They were married. So I hope they were a good team with Curious George. However, you know, if we're talking about contemporary illustration, there are conversations about like, okay, well, is the illustrator, you know, you see authors say my illustrator on social media sometimes. They'll be, yeah. Oh, this is my illustrator did such a great job. I mean, how can you be, how that possessive is, I would say a little disrespectful. But it isn't to say that that is the norm, but it does come up. And this whole idea of like how it's not 50-50, I think generally speaking, seen as 50-50 between illustrator and author, that's something that I think needs to be addressed. We need to keep talking about it and we need to keep pushing back and just to say, you know, it's a picture book, it's an illustration, it's a narrative. It's, you know, you can't have, you can't have Stan Lee without Steve Ditko.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of thing.
So most of what is in my show is, you know, from the past, before 1970. And in many of those cases, the author didn't have any choice in the matter. There are exceptions, though. I have an illustration for an F. Scott Fitzgerald story, and he really liked the illustrator Henry Raleigh. And so, again, there's a whole range of different aspects to how the illustrator was chosen.
Right.
And which parts of the story they chose to illustrate.
Right. Catherine?
Illustration, I was thinking of, I got into scientific illustration, but the reason I got into wanting to do children's books, you know, is the story. And I think a big part of my drive in is my passion is I didn't have children and I wanted to be still a part of children's lives and leave something behind for them. That was my biggest passion, is leaving something behind beyond my life.
Yeah. So I wanted to touch on, you know, for anyone who's ever listened to the podcast, you know, the introduction says the ups and downs. And we do talk about the downs. I think being an illustrator is a fantastic decision. I think as we've heard with art directors, we've heard from other folks, there's plenty of work out there. There actually is. To editorial, tech, publishing, stationery, products. I mean, it is there. It's different. It's not the same as it was, but okay, nothing's the same as it was. If everything was the same as it was, the Orioles would still be winning the World Series, but that hasn't happened in 30 years. Anyways, my point here is it is unfortunately a difficult trek to make. I guess you could say the same thing about any job, any vocation, but illustration especially is pretty hard because it is your heart. It is personal. It is personal, particularly from an illustrator's point of view. And when you're putting out what you're personally connected to and what your heart is attached to, and it's not working, that can take a very serious toll. So my question for everyone here is, what is the most frustrating thing about being an illustrator? What have you personally experienced to be the most frustrating thing? Diana?
I guess mine is more from the business side of things and not having been given a clear, realistic picture of what it means to be an illustrator in terms of earning an income and surviving and paying your bills. Because I feel like when I went to school, I started school in 2010, and it was very much about having one style. But once I graduated, oh, actually the ability to do a variety of styles makes me great for a bunch of production art roles, and I can actually fit into a bunch of industries and have really good paying jobs. But a lot of my friends that had that more specialized style were really frustrated after graduating, where they're like, I can't, you know, like I wanted to be a children's book illustrator, but they're not looking for this style right now. So that's it. It's like you're kind of like stuck in this corner that you put yourself in. But that's kind of what it was taught, because it was this very romantic idea of like your art style is you and you are your art style. But I don't think it has to be that way for everyone. Like, I think you can have very much like a business approach to, I want to work in this, so I need to make myself flexible enough that I can accept a variety of different roles, versus, oh, I'm in a role where I don't have to worry about money. I can focus on my dream art style, and then you can kind of pursue that niche market. But I don't think that's really what should be the standard that is kind of being told to students, or even people like approaching it in their, like, once they're older, because it's really frustrating and really humbling to like kind of believe this and put yourself in a hole and not realize until afterwards, like, oh, I put myself in a hole.
Yeah.
It's really frustrating.
And we heard today from both Jim and Kay, art directors at Penguin and Capstone, that they are very okay with illustrators working in multiple ways. Just keep it organized. Elaine.
I can't work up an interest in sending them out. And then I get frustrated because I'm thinking, why am I doing all this work? No one sees it. So
yeah,
that's very personal in a way. That's like my personal limitation. But you asked what our frustrations were, and that's basically what mine is.
Yeah, that is the hardest part. It's like, how many times can you take basically somebody saying by not saying anything with silence? I know it doesn't mean this, but it sometimes feels this way, like you don't belong. Like you're trying to get their attention and they're not responding to you. As we heard with Jim and Kay, it doesn't mean they could love your work. And we've talked about this on the podcast all, like, they can love your work. I loved plenty of postcards and emails that came my way, never responded to them. And so from the other person's point of view, like who the heck knows what the art director is thinking about work. And so you of course assume the worst, because we're artists and that tends to happen. And it hurts. It sucks. Yeah, that's the worst part of it for sure.
Well, just one thing I'll pass along in case anyone finds this helpful. It occurred to me, because I'm old and I've lived a long time, that once you get to a certain level of expertise with what you're doing and it doesn't get accepted or whatever, it really doesn't have anything to do with the work. It has to do with what that person needs. So you don't have to take it personally. It's not a reflection on what you're capable of, what you're doing, as basically Giuseppe is saying as well. But it really has to do with what their need is at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Catherine?
For me, what's really frustrating is just the folks who are seeking us out to do work and them not valuing the work that we do, like saying, coming to me, like, especially with authors who want to self-publish, just saying, hey, would you like exposure? Like trying to get our art for free and not realizing how much time and energy. And I've even had, you know, done work for art museums and they're just trying to like nickel and dime. And it's like trying to just get others to take our profession seriously and value it how it should be valued, I think is the most frustrating part.
Yeah, 100%. Maya?
Kind of tying into what Catherine was saying, just I've got, like, most of the interest I've gotten in my work so far has been from people who want to self-publish, and I totally appreciate it and everything, but then as soon as I send them my budget or anything with, like, reasonably that I could charge for their project, I don't hear from them again. And then it makes me feel bad quoting, like, even under industry standard prices for them. So yeah, that's been really frustrating.
Yeah, that's the problem with that, is that you start bidding against yourself.
Right.
You're like, I should be charging 1,000, but if I charge 1,000, then they won't respond back to me, so I'll just charge 200. And,
exactly.
And you're just, you're losing out big time. Brian?
The art directors will say, we're really looking for that new, brand new, unique, novel thing. And, then they say, but it can't be that novel. There's a big risk in taking something that is really novel and putting it out there. Mm-hmm. So there's this kind of dynamic tension between that. And that's frustrating. And I guess what you say is, do what you want to do, do what you do well, and do what you love. But there's also the element of, what if what I love and what I love to do and all that stuff is not marketable. So those are my frustrations.
Yeah, that is my biggest problem with do what you love. Yeah, I mean, it's do it, still do it. But you can't do it and assume that it is going to be 100% applicable commercially. There's a very good chance that it won't be. So that's why I think going back to what Diana was saying about maybe expanding the breadth of your creative output or so thinking of some other ways of being creative or maybe some other formats where your work could go, things like that. I mean, that would help. The whole singular focus thing, it's just that I don't think it's, if you want to do it for yourself, because illustration, you could give a darn if you make a buck, I think obviously, yeah, great. But that's not what we're talking about.
Yeah. It's one of those risk reward things on both of those points.
Yeah. Adam?
I recently got into this work, and I got into it by putting a lot of work out there, having a presence, as the art director said. So 2 years of putting work out almost every day, and that got me 1 year of work. And now as I'm working through the work, I'm not as able to put out work because I can't put out the work that I'm currently doing. So it's a really tough balance, because for about a couple of years, I won't be able to show the piece I showed earlier. I won't be able to put work like that out, or it's hard to find the time to do work like that to put out, to get other art directors to see my work. And the work that I am doing, I can't really show for a couple of years. So that's a bit of a tension and a challenge that I'm working through as best I can.
Have you asked your clients at all, hey, do you mind if I share something? I mean, when can I share this work and not maybe assume that you can't do it after the publication of the project?
So what I try and negotiate is I share little things. So I'm doing a spread, but I share a small detail of the spread. So that's what I currently do.
Yeah.
The trade-off.
Yeah. Jen?
Yeah. So I took at least 2, maybe 3 years off from art due to mental health stuff that I've completely recovered from. And when I came back to it, I was level 100 inspired to do my art again. Mm-hmm. And so I'm social media. I fell into that trap. I did. And 5 days a week, maybe 6, peak times, getting up at 5:30, 6 o'clock every morning to do these elaborate posts on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, my blog. It was intense and it became, I loathed it after a while. I've since totally gotten out of that mindset because it's just thinking, falling under the delusion that somebody somewhere of great importance is going to come to me with a job is just that I don't see that as being a reality. I don't think I need to spend that amount of energy every day or however often I was doing it. Put myself on that many platforms that I have no followers.
Mm-hmm.
and I just don't think that's how it's going to happen for me. I have since abandoned it. If I have a new piece, sure, I'll put something out there.
All right.
Just spending that amount of energy.
Yeah.
That made me absolutely hate social media. To the point where I was like, nope, there's got to be a better way. I will find a better way. I need to spend my energy in wise ways, with intention, and not waste my time trying to do it that way, because I don't believe that's the way it's going to work for me. That's just me.
Yeah.
That's my new philosophy. And so if I have a new piece I want to share, sure, I'll do it. If I want to share something, some quote that inspires me, I'll do that. If some artist piece inspires me, I'll do that. You know, those things matter more to me now, you
right.
know, not wasting time putting stuff on the internet that just does not really make me happy, you know? And so
right.
that was frustrating.
Yeah.
That amount of energy wasted, you know?
Yeah.
It wasn't wasted because it was a great lesson to learn, but
right.
that was frustrating.
Who hasn't thought exactly what Jen's been thinking? All right. And that's the big problem. And we talked about that too a little bit with the art directors. Like, it is a huge problem to say, like, you have to have a social media presence. You got to do this. You got to do a song and dance. Because some people can do it and are like, yeah, totally, man. I'm all about it. And some people are just not. And it's not because they are inferior or less than or anything. It is all about how we approach this very toxic platform to, like, as a way of sustaining a career. There's a way to do it. Some people say the way to do it is to not do it at all. And that's fine. And for some people it works. And there's a way to do it, like, you can just sort of like lightly touch that third rail and then get the heck out of there. And, and some people are all about, like, you know, doing songs and dances on TikTok. And guess what? It works for whatever works. But to simply say, like, you can't make a career out of being an illustrator if you don't have Twitter or Instagram is not right. I don't think it's true. And if you're going to say it, then you have to, you can't just say that and then walk away. You have to be able to, like, also offer other opportunities and possibilities and tips and insights into, like, how else could an illustrator get the attention of potential art buyers. That's crazy to say, oh, well, just go on Instagram. No. Matthew, and then I have one more question.
I think it's sort of further with what Jen and you were just talking about, but the fact that, I mean, it so much within creative works now has just been devalued to be creation of content over anything else. And the fact, yeah, like, once again, that people are just probably burning themselves out and wasting their best years just creating content and not really gaining any either, like, life lessons or financial benefits out of it is, like,
right.
It's really, like, yeah, everything's become this, it's just everything's exposure now over like real professional development or creation, and it's
yeah.
annoying. Like, there's sense of pandering, I think, is just, like, it really, yeah, it's just like this dark cloud, I think, over a lot of people, for sure, and definitely myself, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm gonna cop to this. Like, years and years and years ago, when I would share advice on Twitter and stuff, I'd say stuff that I can now see as, like, oh my God, I would never say it now. Like, just pretty toxic stuff. Like, you have to draw every day. You know, you have to do, like, these are the things you have to do in order to, like, make it. And it was like, you know, I thought it would be, it's coming from an art director who works at a reputable publishing house. So yeah, this will be greatly received. And now I look at it, I'm like, there should have been a wider view on, like, okay, well, yeah, here's one way and here are other ways. I hear, one of the things I hear so often about social media is, and this is why, like, I try not to talk about it too much on the podcast, because it can take over. It's like a weed. It's 100% a weed in any conversation. The minute social media comes up, it's like, okay, well, you know, forget the flowers and the pretty grass and stuff. Now we need to talk about this weed for an hour. People will say, well, you know, just post, just like post. But what if you have zero followers? I've yet to hear, like, a true good answer about, like, well, what if you have 100 followers or 10 followers? What do you do? I mean, yeah, my answer is, like, you have to, if you're posting, you want to post and you only have 10 followers, of course, keep posting. But yeah, like, I don't even have 100, you know, says somebody, says Jen. So what do you do? And I
go ahead.
Sorry,
I get all the points that were said, and I totally agree. But I also want to say that as someone who is not a very social media person, I started Instagram when I started with art. And I have to say that there is a really nice community, and I expected a lot of toxicity, but it actually was very kind and very encouraging. And for me in the beginning, it wasn't about getting followers, but to connect with other people who do art. And in that sense, it's helped me a lot. And it also, I see a lot of people that were in the same time with me and started that developed a lot just because they did art and they did the challenges of other artists. And I think that is a good point. Yeah. Of course, not invalidating what was said before, but yeah.
Thank you for bringing the positivity back into the conversation. So I want to end on this question, speaking of positivity. I'll ask you guys what I ask my guests. What would be one piece of advice that you want to share with illustrators? And if I may, if I can like sort of lean it into the positive side, unless you want to say like, don't be an illustrator, then fine. That's fine. You can share that. But what would be like one, yeah, a little piece of advice that you want to share with folks listening who, you know, want to just maybe, you know, show up at the next ID with you guys? We'll start with Helena.
To make personal connections, like even though maybe we can't necessarily be in the same place at the same time, and that's a great part of technology is that we can do this and not spend thousands of dollars on a conference. As much as I love going to those, I totally am addicted to them if I had the money for it. But I think it's great to make these personal in real time connections, and you know, we can do that on social media too, but this feels like more special, more personable. It's great to be able to talk to art directors in real time and talk to colleagues in real time, and that's something that I really, really missed during the pandemic, and it's just been wonderful to be able to kind of reconnect with people in that way again.
Thanks, Helena. Matthew?
I mean, I guess overall, and this is advice I need to take myself, is just to like know your value as an illustrator. I mean, so many people, I think there's a combination of like people sort of like devalue it as a professional service, and then within our own mindset that the fact that we're pursuing it professionally somehow dilutes the art and stuff like that. Like, you know, the whole art versus commerce argument, I think is something that's consistent struggle for a lot of us. And yeah.
Adam.
So what I would say to any illustrator trying to get in is that it's a journey for all of us, and all of us are at different places in the journey. So the advice would be to reach out to the people who are ahead of us, maybe not the ones who are too far ahead, but the ones slightly ahead that you think, the spot that you think you can get to, reach out to those guys. And they're more than happy to pull you forward. At the same time, when you get forward, reach out to the guys just slightly behind you so you can pull them forward as well. And I think that's a great way to build community and help everyone along.
Exactly. That's a great point. That's the end of it. That is the end of it. And this has been, I've enjoyed it. I guess time will tell if everyone else has. But this is the end of the podcast. This is the end of the first IDID. And I just wanted to, in person, as much as this is in person, thank everybody here for signing up for this and for sitting with us for 3-4 hours talking about illustration and its history and its future. And thank you all so much for your questions and for being so honest. And go have yourself a great weekend.
If you enjoyed our conversation, please share it with your friends, follow the podcast, and provide a positive rating and review. Become a patron by visiting patreon.com/illustrationdept. In return, you will receive our soft enamel pin, a reusable discount code for 10% off, and access to patron-only episodes that we call Extra Credit. This podcast is produced by the Illustration Department, a global leader in online education for illustrators. Visit illustrationdept.com for class offerings, testimonials, the alumni showcase, the podcast show notes, our forum, the bookshop, and more. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.